And welcome back to Innovation on Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and we're going to take some time now and talk a little bit about soil and soil conservation and some best practices that farmers are choosing to use. So let me introduce my guest. Jeff Hemingway is a soil quality specialist with the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. Jeff, thanks for joining us today on Innovation.
Well, thanks for having me. Pleasure is mine.
And full disclosure, when I asked the USDA for assistance in finding a farmer that's using these practices, they came up with Paul Hetland. So, Paul, welcome to Innovation. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And Paul happens, of course, we live in South Dakota, so of course Paul and I are related. He and my husband are first cousins. So thanks for taking time for being on the show today. So let's start and talk a little bit about soil conservation and what that is, Jeff.
Well, when we talk about soil conservation, we're talking about a whole host of things in general. But what, for the most part, what we're talking about is preserving our soils, conserving our soils, and building our soils. And in the past, it's been something that we've really talked about as far as from a soil erosion standpoint. We still do that. But in the present, we're really talking about more of a soil health standpoint, and that actually, it provides us an opportunity for a whole host of different approaches, reducing or eliminating tillage in systems and diversifying our rotations, and, some of the newer things that we're doing, cover crops, looking at other testing methods, et cetera. So that's, in a nutshell, some of the newest, latest, and greatest.
Okay, so being a city girl, I just thought you go out, you till, you plant, they grow, right? But you need to take care and protect the nutrients in the soil. Is that right, Paul?
Yes. Growing up, that was very much the system that we would follow. A lot of times we would do tillage, and a lot of that tillage was around trying to prepare a seed bed so that we could get that seed in the ground and get it to come up and grow. And as agriculture has evolved, we're starting to understand that some of that tillage may have been harmful to the soil, may have exposed it to various kinds of damage through erosion, water, wind, some of those types of things. So I think that's where no-till comes into play and allows us to utilize some farming practices that really help us protect our biggest asset from loss, either through wind or water or any of those other destructive forces.
So are you completely no-till now, Paul?
Our goal is to be completely no-till. I hesitate to use extremes. There are times where we do limited tillage if needed. There are times where we've experienced very wet times of the year. We do leave tracks in the field sometimes when we have to make necessary field passes. And the only way to fix things like that are to do some tillage passes to level and smooth. But our primary farming techniques are centered around no-till and use of other tools that help us accomplish the things that tillage used to.
Okay, so talk about growing up, and Jeff, you can jump in here too. Talk about growing up and how technology then has changed to enable you to do these practices.
Well, I'd probably summarize two different areas that are a huge benefit to us in terms of being able to reduce tillage levels. The first is probably the technology and the equipment that we have available. We have equipment that can get that seed into the ground in good condition. We have openers that can cut residue. We have row cleaners that can move residue out of the way. And then there's so much technology that has increased around seed treatments, fungicides, insecticides, things that allow us to put that seed in what would have been considered a hostile environment and allow it to still be very productive. So the innovation in those two areas has really allowed us to change the way that we do things on our farm.
I guess I would add to that on Paul's comments that got some, well, some really, some also some genetic increase, technology developments in the last number of years. In addition to that, we're actually looking at, well, other management technology that we actually look at, the implementation of, we talk about cover crops now, something that wasn't, mm-hmm. at least when I was young on the farm, that wasn't something that we talked about at all. And then diversifying that and planting that in sequence with other crops is, it's really pretty new.
Give me an example of what a cover crop is.
Paul has some great experience in this too, but typically it's a mixture of could be brassicas, legumes, and grasses, brassicas being turnips and radishes, usually planted in South Dakota subsequently after a small grain crop, but we've seen some new technology moving that into even row crops now. So you've got this green crop later in the year, probably in after wheat harvest, et cetera, that we really haven't seen out in the field before, and it's different on the landscape. So.
And then are you able to sell it, or is it just to protect the soil?
Paul, go ahead.
We use it specifically for a soil health aspect. On our farm, we had transitioned from a typical corn-soybean rotation. We implemented wheat into our rotation just to give us a more diverse rotation. We started with cover crops behind wheat. One of the things that we saw as an opportunity was there's a large period from the time the wheat is harvested, typically in mid to late July, until the time that corn crop the following spring is planted. We have about an 8 to 10 month period where there's nothing growing. So we use that cover crop on our farm to help us with soil compaction. So we'll utilize the brassicas for things like that, tillage, radishes, turnips, things with a tap root that will give us some penetration down into a hard soil. We will use legumes, field peas, clovers. We'll use things like oats to give us a diverse mixture of different varieties with soil conditioning benefits. All of these things kind of work hand in hand to do things like fix nitrogen, to help us break down that wheat residue that's left in the field. One of the things that we have an issue with in this part of the world in no-tilling is that we don't get as much moisture as other areas, and some of those residues take some time to break down. If we can establish a good, strong cover crop, that'll give us a canopy over those old residues, help us segregate them so that they don't combat us the next spring when we are going to seed the subsequent crop. So we really, the more that I look into these cover crops, the more options are out there and opportunities for us to do good things to our soil. So it's a pretty exciting tool for us.
Talk a little bit, Jeff, about what different crops bring and take away from the soil.
Well, you know, as Paul was talking about, is that we have a number of crop types we have out there. For the most part, when we're actually talking about building soils, in other words, making them more healthy, we're talking about increasing organic matter levels in soils. And we're talking typically about crops that produce a lot of residue and a lot of biomass within that system. Corn is a good example of that. Small grains like wheat would also be a good example. But in addition to that, it's kind of like having a mixed diet out there. As you look at that rotation, having a crop that actually has legumes in the mix, like either soybeans or within our cover crops, peas, long-term crops like alfalfa, all enhance that benefit of to the soil itself and increase soil health. To kind of back up just a little bit, when I talk about soil organic matter, that's that black, typically dark colored coloration we think of as being a very healthy, robust part of our soils. And at some point, the more we have, the more we actually gain from a nutrient holding capacity, water holding capacity. And as Paul was pointing out, is that structure, when we talk about infiltrating water, is dramatically enhanced with that benefit. So.
So then, okay, so, I'm being the city girl again here to just have a deeper level of understanding. But how do you know? I mean, how do you know how healthy your soil is? Is there a way to test it? Is it just by sight, by touch?
A number of ways we can actually go out, and Paul could help address this too at some point. But typically, going out there and using a spade, of course, is one of the traditional ways we've done this. But recently, we've actually, and this isn't a recent test by any way, shape, or form, but we've recently provided more of this to producers. We're using single ring infiltrometers. In other words, it's an infiltrometer and a infiltration ring that actually measure. We can measure the amount of water going in the soil profile. There's some other tests that are fairly new to look at, not just the chemical aspects we have in the past, soil fertility aspects, but also looking at some of the other physical and biological parameters. There's some new Haney, and relatively new Haney test, PLFA. There's a number of other tests that we could send into labs and look at some of those other parameters we haven't in the past.
Jeff, and one of the things that I would add to that is as a producer and something, you know, that might come across to anyone is that just the physical properties of healthy soil. You know, we're getting ready to plant corn here very soon, and a soil that's healthy to me is one that I can go out on, as you say, if you stick a spade in the ground or a garden tool or anything of that nature, if you bring that ground up and it flocculates or crumbles in your hand, if I'm able to go through there with my corn planter and lay that seed in the ground and cover that furrow back up with a soil that won't crust or smear, to me, that's the type of environment that I need for that seed. If you've got soil that, if it gets wet, it's greasy, the sidewalls can compact, and when you lay dirt over that seed and cover it up, it can crust and prohibit emergence for that plant and slow things down. You know, those are the things that healthy soil does for me. That it's easy to put that plant in the ground, get that plant emerged. Those are some of the hardest things that we have or that we encounter with the cool, wet springs that we face a lot of times in this part of the country.
And a healthier soil then means a better yield, a better crop, a more successful season?
Certainly. I always think that's the bottom line. That's the end result. And, you know, there's maybe not always a direct correlation year over year, but certainly as you average things out and as we continue to work with these soils, they just become more consistent. It's easier to grow a consistent crop, a healthier crop, a more productive crop. Sometimes you can grow the same crop on less inputs. Sometimes you grow a better crop on the same input. So there's a lot of different ways that you can measure this. Some days some years it means maybe we're able to get on that ground two or three or four days earlier than another piece of ground.
And is this considered relatively new? I mean, do you find, Paul, that you have to convince people that you're making the right choices, or are all farmers on board with this?
You know, I think there's been some people, some producers around that, you know, since the early 90s, as far as I'm aware, there are people that have been working with no-till, improving health quality. That most producers seem to really have a desire. They understand that the soil is their asset. So I think people really understand that there's a benefit. The other side of the equation is that it's not without its challenges. It can be frustrating at times. There are things that we do in regard to, like, the cover crops where it does require an extra pass to seed those crops after harvest of the wheat. And so sometimes there's extra equipment involved. But in general, I don't think there is a level of non-acceptance. I think that most people really stand behind the idea of protecting the soil.
And with the harsh winter and then the deeper frost, I think, than we've seen in quite a while, is this going to delay planting?
I think that the frost, while it did run deep and there is some frost in certain areas, I think we're looking at this point in our area at a relatively normal planting start. We are hoping that early next week we can get into the field We're anxious to get our planter out. We did install a lot of new technology on it this year, so we want to get out and make sure that everything is working at a level that we think it should. And then I think, depending on the forecast, by the end of the week or the beginning of the following week, we'll be starting in earnest and really trying to turn things up. So typically on a normal year, our goal is to start somewhere around the 20th of April, and we should be on track for that unless the extended forecast turns more adverse and holds us out.
And Jeff, quickly, we just have about 30 seconds. The USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service has information available if people have questions.
Absolutely. We have field offices in all counties, but at some point you can log on to our website. You can call one of our field offices. Typically, when we start really looking at soil health, it's a national initiative, and it's going to be something that we're actually trying to build soil resiliency into our system. And Paul was doing a great job of talking about that, is that at some point what we're really looking at is making those soils productive so that we can be very consistent for production into the future.